Reed Hastings founded Netflix in 1999 and has built up a subscriber base of 57 million with plans for global market saturation in the next 2 years.
The days of TV remote roulette may be numbered.
The latest offering arriving in a hail of publicity.
Now the video streaming service Netflix is coming to Australia.
Is this the biggest threat that Australian free-to-air TV has ever faced?
I think it's the biggest threat they've ever faced in the internet age.
Oh, well, I wanted to start, Reed, by asking, you must be a master of understanding consumer behaviour, naming Netflix that nearly 15 years ago, 1999. You always knew, even though you were selling DVDs by post, that it was going to be an online service.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I mean, we grew up on the internet, so we were always thinking Netflix would be an internet business eventually, and so we named it Netflix. But our first 10 years was all DVD by post because the internet wasn't fast enough. And then finally in 2007, we could do a little bit of streaming, and then it's just gotten faster and better, you know, for the last 9 years.
Before we get to the business model, what's your background? How did you come to be in this place that you're in now?
Incredible luck. I mean, I started as an engineer, a software engineer, and was doing a company like Atlassian, that's software tools. And then that company got acquired in 1997. And a friend of mine and I knew about DVD. It was just starting then. And we just had this idea that, you know, we could do DVD by mail. And eventually, when the internet got fast enough, pivot to that.
You're a great disruptor, or this company has been in many ways, in content and also in local markets around the world. Firstly, with content, how do you see the transformation? How do you see the impact streaming and delivering full series in one big lump? How do you see that influencing storytelling?
Well, we're really the binge-viewing company that way. And people think about us as, you know, I can watch 3 episodes on the weekend and when I have some time. And that's really exciting. But really, that's like a book. You can read as many chapters as you want in a book. It's not that novel, really. It's just applying, no pun intended, it's just applying that to the TV space. And people want control. They have busy lives. They want to be able to watch when they want and on what screen they want. And that's always been possible with the internet.
I guess HBO's been part of this trajectory as well. And people talk about the rise of, well, deep stories, broad stories, massive dramas. Do you kind of think that this is a new paradigm in a way, or is it just something that's always been there? I mean, you know, Shakespeare did all this, really.
Sure. If you go way back in television's history, right, it was just black and white. It ended at 10 p.m. and it was a miracle at its time, but it was very limited. And over time, there were multiple channels and longer programming and color. And then there was cable networks doing even more, like HBO, and doing things that, you know, that had sex and violence and that didn't belong on the public airwaves. So the technology's often allowed more storytelling, and yet House of Cards, it's basically Richard III. So you're right that, you know, it what comes around goes around, and we're all retelling some of these great human stories.
Speaking of human stories, your leadership style is quite distinctive, quite well known. I believe part of it is based on an idea called freedom through responsibility.
That's right. And we've always focused on creating a work environment that we wanted to work at. And we realized what we want to do is not be managed. We want to be inspired. And what we focus on is giving people great freedom and hoping like heck they do great work. And we couple that with our high performance culture, where we're very demanding on performance, more like a sports team where you need great players in every position. And so, but we're a very small firm. We're under 2,000 employees. And so it's not necessarily that this is right for everybody, but for us, it works really well.
I understand your management team are allowed to sort of nominate what holidays they have. Does that mean they take 3 days a year instead of 3 months?
Well, I try to set a good example and take 5 or 6 weeks. I take long vacations. But I often find that when I'm on vacation, I'm also sometimes thinking about Netflix, or, you know, you might get your best idea in the shower. And so this in creative work, there's not really the separation of you're on the clock. Now you're creative. And then you get off the clock and you're not. And so really these ideas bubble around and in the back of people's heads. So we want to treat them really well. And if you think about it, suppose we have someone who abuses the policy and takes 6 months off a year. But in the 6 months that they're at Netflix, they do some of the best storytelling we've ever seen. Oh, that'd be great.
Okay, well, let's get to the entry of Netflix into Australia. Are you a disruptor or are you bringing us a new monopoly?
Well, internet TV is really the disruptor. The internet drives so many new scenarios, and whether that's YouTube or whether it's Nine Jump In, there's all kinds of ways to enjoy stories and content, including Netflix. So we're riding that wave. And you could say, okay, Netflix is the symbol of internet television because we're the best well-known. That may be true. But it's actually highly fragmented and diverse compared to networks. You know, in broadcast networks, you have to get a license. There can only be these 20 or 25 networks. It's very constrained. Whereas in the internet, people can do amazing new video. An example is Twitch TV. Started just about 2 years ago. It's a video gaming and a voiceover on video gaming. And amongst young people, they love it. A whole new form of video entertainment. So if we had to go get a license and a network, those things would never happen. And so the internet lets people tell more stories, and there'll be more competition than we've ever seen before.
Some people might say that your momentum, because of your global nature, is so great that other competitors don't really have a chance. Like Stan and Presto can't really match your back catalogue, can't come up with the original material that you're able to do, and therefore, essentially, you're on your way to making a monopoly.
Well, what's great about Netflix is then by entering the market, we make it more competitive. So, you know, Stan came in partially because we were entering, and Presto cut their prices a lot. So it's great for Australians to have that competition. And it is true that nobody wants only one company, you know, to be the only firm, because then they get soft. But we're really competing for so much entertainment time. If you think of all the times you don't use Netflix and you read a magazine or you kill time on Facebook or, you know, you're watching sport, there's such a broad market for entertainment time that, you know, no one firm is ever going to own much of it.
Would you be buying shares in free-to-air television at the moment?
I think free-to-air television will decline in most markets over the next 20 years, like fixed-line telephone. So in its day, the fixed-line telephone was a miracle. I mean, you could call someone across the country. It was amazing. And then the mobile phone came. And now, you know, your grandparents have a fixed-line phone, and your parents might, but they don't use it, and you probably don't. So that's a generational transfer. And that's happening with internet TV too. Young people will grow up on demand and they'll look at the shows on at 7 o'clock. You know, that'll be like, send me a fax. You know, it's like some voice from the past. But it will take 10 or 20 years.
That is a bit of a sad thing, I think, that loss of campfire TV, the national appointment with a certain
Absolutely.
Show. That is a loss.
Every transfer of technology is a loss. So 100 years ago, we would be intimate with horses. We would know all how to take care of them, and we'd be experts at it. And then along came automobiles, and we lost that great connection with a large, powerful animal.
So
society is filled with these, where technology is mostly good but not perfectly good, and you lose some things and you gain some others.
Now, one of the great things about the more regulated television environment of the present and the past is that we've been able to guarantee Australian content. What protection is there for Australian content?
Well, there's funding Australian content, which the government can choose to do, networks can choose to do, and then Netflix is doing. So there was a show, H2O, a tween teenage comedy, and then it was really quite good and quite popular around the world. And so then we funded them to build a follow-on called Mako Mermaids, okay, produced here in Australia, but for a global audience. And so that kind of thing we're doing around the world, we've got a show we're producing in Mexico right now, and we launched in Latin America 3 years ago. So think of us as producing around the world and connecting people. So we want Australians to have the best Argentine films and the best Danish crime noir and just, you know, all the great stories, including Australian stories.
So you're diversifying rather than homogenizing.
Exactly. So it's connecting so that small, great Japanese anime can really have an audience. And again, that includes some great Australian film that can get a global audience.
Has our government been really too slow in looking at the future and making these predictions and letting a business like yours come to our shores without putting in place some really strict conditions?
You know, in general, the Western governments are very open about internet firms growing, both local. You look at Atlassian here in Sydney, and they're a global firm now. Netflix uses their software, and so do thousands of firms around the world based here in Sydney. Then there's Netflix based in California. And so what we're seeing with the internet is an ability to go for global markets, no matter where you are in the world.
To the future then, there's a platform that you may well be aware of called Popcorn Time, which has been getting a lot of, well, people say it's a beautifully designed interface. It's like a peer-to-peer movie sharing site, but it's torrented. Is that your next competitor? How do you protect your business against the pirates?
Well, BitTorrent has always been the piracy's love, and lots of people torrent around the world. Some of it is because there's not affordable, easy access to content. Not all of it, but some of it. And what we saw in Canada, a very law-abiding society, is everyone was torrenting. Suburban moms were torrenting because the content they wanted was not available.
Why would you be surprised at suburban moms doing that?
Because they're mostly focused on their family, and they were having to geek out and download these files, and it was very mainstream. But what we've seen in the last 4 years, looking at the network traffic, is that as Netflix has grown, BitTorrent has shrunk. And sure, there's a hardcore young people who might always pirate. But in general, you know, for Netflix is so inexpensive at $10 a month that most people would pay and have the easy convenience of having the legal. And so definitely part of our competition is piracy.
Reed Hastings, thank you for talking with us today.
A great pleasure. Thank you.
Reed Hastings is the founder of Netflix. And it was interesting to hear him mention Atlassian in that interview from March last year. Netflix uses a software platform created by Atlassian, the Australian technology company. In December, Atlassian was floated on the NASDAQ with a valuation of $8 billion. Not bad for a company that was founded by two Sydney blokes. Was Rodrigo Amarante, Brazilian singer-songwriter, and his piece Tuyo, which was used as the theme for the 2015 Netflix original series Narcos. It told the story of Colombia's infamous Medellin drug cartel and the rise and fall of the kingpin Pablo Escobar.